The adamantium dust had worked its way so deep into my lungs that I could taste metal with every breath. 3 years, 7 months, and 16 days since the tribunal on Cadia Prime had stripped me of my rank, my honor, and my future. The brand on my forehead still ached in the cold mornings when the temperature dropped below freezing in the dormitory blocks. Coward. The word burned deeper than the laser that had carved it into my flesh. Penal labor colony Tertius 7 squatted on the surface of Koreth Prime like a cancerous growth, its hab blocks and processing facilities spreading across the barren landscape in geometric precision. The mining world's red sky never changed, perpetually choked with industrial smog and the fine particulate matter that rose from the excavation sites. I had learned to navigate by the towering smokestacks that belched toxic fumes into the atmosphere, each one marking a different sector of the complex where thousands of condemned souls like myself carved the Emperor's adamantium from the planet's bones. The hierarchy here was simple and absolute. At the top sat Arbitrator Marshall Kine, a mountain of ceramite armor and augmetic implants whose voice could be heard echoing through the facility's Vox system at all hours. Below him, the Adeptus Arbites overseers maintained order through fear and violence, their shock mauls crackling with energy as they patrolled the work zones. I had seen them beat men to death for infractions as minor as stumbling during a shift change or failing to meet their daily quota by a few kilograms of processed ore. The servo skulls were worse than the human overseers in many ways. At least the Arbites could be predicted, their brutality following certain patterns and triggers. The floating mechanical horrors that drifted through the tunnels and dormitories operated on programming I could never fully understand. Their red optical sensors tracked every movement, recorded every word, analyzed every gesture for signs of sedition or weakness. I had watched a man named Corvin get dragged away by enforcement servitors after one of the skulls had flagged him for suspicious behavior. His crime had been looking at the sky too long during the brief meal break between shifts. The work itself was killing me slowly. 16 hours in the deep tunnels, wielding heavy mining equipment that had been manufactured centuries ago and maintained with whatever scrap materials the tech adepts could scavenge from other broken machines. My hands had developed permanent tremors from operating the pneumatic drills, and my back had curved into a permanent hunch from crawling through the narrow extraction passages where the richest veins of adamantium could be found. The radiation from the ore had turned my skin a sickly yellow color, and my hair had begun falling out in clumps. Every morning began the same way. The klaxons would sound at 0400 hours, their harsh mechanical wailing echoing through the dormitory blocks where we slept on metal slabs covered with thin synthetic blankets. The servo skulls would descend from their charging alcoves in the ceiling, their optical sensors sweeping across the rows of bodies to ensure no one had died during the night. Those who had expired were dragged away by servitors before the rest of us were herded toward the processing stations for our daily rations. The protein paste dispensers stood in long rows throughout the facility, ancient standard template construct devices that had been producing the same gray sludge for longer than anyone could remember. The machines themselves were monuments to decay and neglect, their metal housings corroded by centuries of use and exposure to the planet's toxic atmosphere. Rust stains ran down their sides like dried blood, and many of the dispensing nozzles had been replaced with crude substitutes welded into place by whoever had been tasked with keeping them functional. The paste itself defied description in any terms that might suggest it had once been food. It emerged from the dispensers in measured portions, exactly 200 grams per ration card, with the consistency of wet concrete and a color that reminded me of corpse flesh left too long in the sun. The taste was worse than the appearance suggested. Whatever organic matter had been processed into the mixture had been so thoroughly broken down and reconstituted that it bore no resemblance to anything that had ever lived. The synthetic nutrients added to prevent immediate death from malnutrition gave it a chemical aftertaste that lingered in my mouth for hours after each meal. I had tried to analyze the ingredients listed on the faded labels affixed to each dispenser, but the Gothic script had been worn away by decades of handling and exposure to industrial chemicals. What remained legible spoke of corpse starch, recycled organic matter, and various synthetic compounds with names I could not pronounce. The tech adepts who maintained the machines refused to discuss their contents, responding to any questions with the standard litany about the Emperor's providence and the necessity of accepting his gifts without question. The rations were distributed 3 times per day, corresponding to the shift changes that marked the passage of time in the facility. Each worker received the same measured portion regardless of their size, age, or the physical demands of their assigned labor. I had watched men waste away over the course of months, their bodies consuming themselves as the meager nutrition provided by the paste proved insufficient to sustain them through the brutal work schedule. The lucky ones died quickly from accidents or enforcement actions. The unlucky ones lingered, growing thinner and weaker, until they could no longer lift their tools or walk without assistance. My own body had begun to fail in ways that frightened me more than the prospect of execution. The constant hunger had become a living thing inside my chest, gnawing at my ribs and making it difficult to concentrate on anything beyond the next meal. My muscles had atrophied despite the heavy labor, the protein in the rations insufficient to maintain the tissue that years of military service had built. My vision had grown dim in the perpetual twilight of the tunnels, and I found myself stumbling over obstacles that should have been clearly visible. The worst part was the knowledge that this deterioration was not accidental. The Adeptus Arbites had calculated the exact minimum nutrition required to keep a human being functional for the duration of their sentence, and the dispensers provided exactly that amount and no more. Every gram of protein, every vitamin supplement, every calorie had been measured against the expected lifespan of a penal laborer. We were being kept alive just long enough to extract the maximum value from our bodies before they gave out entirely. I had begun to dream about food with an intensity that bordered on madness. Real food, the kind I had eaten during my service with the Astra Militarum before my disgrace. Processed meat from actual animals, vegetables grown in soil rather than hydroponic tanks, bread made from grain instead of recycled organic waste. The dreams were so vivid that I would wake with the taste of phantom meals in my mouth, only to have reality crash back down as the klaxons announced another shift and another day of gray paste and grinding labor. The other prisoners had developed their own methods of coping with the constant malnutrition. Some hoarded portions of their rations, hiding small amounts of paste in their clothing or personal effects in hopes of having extra food when the hunger became unbearable. Others traded favors or information for additional rations, though such transactions were dangerous given the omnipresent surveillance of the servo skulls. A few had simply given up, eating their portions mechanically while their minds retreated into whatever private worlds they could construct to escape the reality of their situation. I had tried all of these approaches and found them wanting. Hoarding the paste only delayed the inevitable hunger, and the risk of discovery by the overseers made the practice more dangerous than beneficial. I had nothing to trade and no information valuable enough to exchange for food. As for mental escape, my military training had conditioned me to remain alert and aware of my surroundings at all times, making it impossible to retreat into comforting delusions. The dispensers themselves had become objects of obsession for many of the prisoners. We would study their mechanical operations during meal times, noting the slight variations in portion size, the occasional mechanical hiccup that might result in a slightly larger serving, the patterns of maintenance that might indicate when fresh supplies were being loaded into their storage tanks. Some men claimed they could predict which dispensers would malfunction and provide extra rations, though I had never observed any evidence to support these theories. The machines operated with the same inexorable precision that characterized all Imperial technology, dispensing their measured portions with mechanical indifference to the desperation of those who depended on them. Their ancient cogitators had been programmed with routines that had remained unchanged for centuries, and no amount of pleading, threatening, or mechanical manipulation could alter their function. They served the Emperor's will by keeping his prisoners alive and functional, nothing more and nothing less. As my 4th year in the facility approached, I could feel my body beginning the final stages of its decline. The tremors in my hands had worsened to the point where I struggled to operate my mining equipment effectively. My supervisors had begun to notice, their augmetic eyes tracking my movements with increased attention during the daily inspections. I knew that once my productivity dropped below acceptable levels, I would be marked for termination. The Emperor's mercy extended only as far as my usefulness to his war machine. The paste continued to taste like ash and despair, each meal a reminder of how far I had fallen from the man who had once served the Imperium with pride and honor. Yet I consumed it faithfully, mechanically, because the alternative was death, and some stubborn part of my soul refused to surrender to the darkness that surrounded me on all sides. The change began on the 14th day of my fourth year in this emperor-forsaken pit. I noticed it first during the morning ration distribution, when Jorik stumbled out of line near Dispenser Unit Gamma 9 with an expression I had never seen on his weathered face before. The former gunnery sergeant had always maintained the rigid discipline of his guard training, even after 3 years of grinding labor had worn him down to sinew and bone. Yet there he stood, swaying slightly on his feet, his scarred features slack with something that looked disturbingly like bliss. The paste emerging from Gamma 9 looked different. Where the standard rations maintained their familiar corpse gray consistency, this new variant possessed an almost amber hue that caught the dim lumens overhead. The texture appeared smoother, less granular than the usual sludge, and most unsettling of all, it actually smelled like something approaching food. The synthetic chemical reek that normally accompanied our meals had been replaced by an aroma that triggered memories I thought had been buried beneath years of malnutrition and despair. I watched Jorik consume his portion with an intensity that bordered on reverence. His movements had slowed, becoming deliberate and focused in a way that reminded me of men I had seen consuming Obscura in the underhive districts of Cadia Prime. The former sergeant closed his eyes as he swallowed, his throat working slowly as if he wanted to savor every moment of the experience. When he finished, he remained standing beside the dispenser for several minutes, staring at the empty container in his hands with an expression of profound loss. The behavioral changes spread through the labor gangs with frightening speed. Within hours of the first distribution, word had somehow circulated throughout the facility that Gamma 9 was producing something extraordinary. The usual shuffle of exhausted workers became a focused migration toward the deepest mining sector where the dispenser stood. Men who had barely possessed the strength to complete their assigned quotas suddenly found the energy to volunteer for additional shifts in the hopes of earning extra rations. I found myself drawn to investigate the source of this anomaly, though I could not articulate exactly why. The deep mining sector had always been considered the worst assignment in the facility, where the radiation levels were highest and the extraction work most dangerous. The tunnels leading to Gamma 9 descended far below the main excavation sites, following adamantium veins that disappeared into the planet's core. The air down there carried a metallic taste that was different from the usual industrial contamination, something organic and unsettling that made my skin crawl. The dispenser itself occupied an alcove carved from the living rock, its ancient housing showing signs of modification that had not been present on the other units. Cables and feeding tubes snaked away into the darkness, disappearing through gaps in the stone that suggested connections to systems I could not identify. The standard Imperial Aquila had been partially obscured by some kind of biological growth, a network of thin filaments that pulsed with faint bioluminescence in the perpetual twilight of the deep tunnels. My first taste of the new paste variant came during the evening ration distribution, when I managed to position myself near Gamma 9 despite the growing crowds of workers who had begun to congregate around the dispenser. The moment the substance touched my tongue, I understood why men were fighting for access to this particular machine. The flavor was indescribable, a complex sweetness that seemed to awaken taste receptors I had forgotten existed. More than that, it triggered a cascade of sensations that went far beyond simple nutrition. The euphoric effect was immediate and overwhelming. Every nerve in my body seemed to come alive with pleasant warmth, while the constant ache of hunger that had gnawed at my stomach for years simply vanished. My vision sharpened, colors becoming more vivid in the dim lighting of the facility. The perpetual fatigue that had weighed down my limbs lifted like fog before the morning sun, leaving me feeling more alert and energetic than I had since my first days of military service. But beneath the euphoria lurked something else, a sensation I could not immediately identify. As the paste settled in my stomach, I became aware of a subtle movement, as if the substance possessed a life of its own. The feeling was not painful, merely unsettling, like the flutter of insect wings against the inside of my abdomen. I dismissed it as a side effect of the sudden nutritional improvement, though some deeper instinct whispered warnings I chose to ignore. The productivity increases throughout the facility became impossible to overlook. Workers who had struggled to meet their daily quotas were suddenly exceeding them by significant margins. The exhaustion that normally forced men to collapse onto their sleeping slabs at the end of each shift seemed to have evaporated, replaced by a restless energy that kept them moving long after the klaxons announced the end of their assigned labor periods. Some began volunteering for double shifts, then triple shifts, their bodies apparently immune to the fatigue that should have crippled them. I found myself among their number, though I could not explain the compulsion that drove me to seek additional work assignments. The rational part of my mind recognized the danger in drawing attention from the overseers, yet I could not resist the opportunity to earn extra rations from Gamma 9. The new paste had become more than sustenance. It represented hope in a place where hope had been systematically eliminated. Each portion provided not just nutrition, but a temporary escape from the grinding despair that defined existence in the facility. The competition for access to the blessed dispenser grew increasingly vicious as word spread through the labor gangs. Men who had been too weak to lift their heads during meal times suddenly possessed the strength to fight over positions in the distribution lines. I witnessed former allies turn against each other with savage brutality, their desperation overriding years of shared suffering and mutual support. The servo skulls recorded these incidents with mechanical indifference, their optical sensors tracking the violence without intervention. Sleep became an unwelcome interruption rather than a necessary respite. The energy provided by the new paste variant seemed to eliminate the body's natural need for rest, allowing workers to remain active for periods that should have been physiologically impossible. I found myself lying on my sleeping slab during the designated rest periods, staring at the corroded ceiling while my mind raced with thoughts of the next meal distribution. The hours stretched endlessly, each minute an eternity of anticipation for the moment when I could return to Gamma 9. The hoarding behavior that had once been limited to desperate attempts at survival transformed into something approaching religious devotion. Workers began concealing portions of the new paste with fanatical care, treating each saved gram as a sacred relic. I discovered hidden caches throughout the dormitory blocks, carefully wrapped packages that men guarded with their lives. The violence that erupted when these hoards were discovered exceeded anything I had witnessed during my years in the facility. My own addiction developed with terrifying speed, despite every instinct trained into me during my military service. The logical part of my mind recognized the signs of dependency, the way my thoughts increasingly centered around the next distribution, the growing anxiety when separated from the dispenser for extended periods. Yet this knowledge proved powerless against the compulsion that drove me to seek out additional rations through any means necessary. The AuSpex readings from the deep mining sector had begun showing anomalies that the tech adepts could not explain. Biological signatures appeared and disappeared in patterns that suggested some form of organized activity, though no living creatures had been detected in the tunnels below Gamma 9. The electromagnetic disturbances grew stronger with each passing day, interfering with Vox communications and causing the servo skulls to exhibit erratic behavior when they ventured too close to the dispenser. I began to notice changes in the other workers who had been consuming the new paste variant for longer periods. Their skin had taken on a pallor that went beyond the usual effects of malnutrition and radiation exposure, becoming almost translucent in certain lighting conditions. Their movements had acquired a fluid quality that seemed unnatural, as if their joints had been somehow modified to allow for greater flexibility. Most disturbing of all, their eyes had developed a subtle luminescence that became visible in complete darkness. The movement in my stomach had grown stronger and more persistent, no longer dismissible as imagination or side effects. Something was definitely alive inside me, responding to the consumption of additional paste portions with increased activity. The sensation was not painful, but it filled me with a growing sense of unease that I struggled to suppress. The euphoric effects of the paste made it difficult to focus on these concerns for extended periods, the pleasant haze of satisfaction overwhelming my attempts at rational analysis. The facility's routine began to break down as more workers abandoned their assigned schedules in favor of clustering around Gamma 9. The overseers initially responded with their usual brutality, shock mauls crackling as they attempted to restore order to the distribution lines. However, even they seemed affected by prolonged exposure to the workers who had been consuming the new paste variant, their aggressive responses becoming more subdued and uncertain. Production quotas were being exceeded by unprecedented margins, yet the quality of extracted adamantium had begun to decline in ways that puzzled the tech adepts responsible for processing the raw ore. The metal showed signs of contamination that appeared biological in nature, though no known organism could survive the extreme conditions of the deep mining tunnels. The mysterious filaments that had appeared around Gamma 9 were spreading throughout the lower levels, creating networks of pulsing organic matter that defied classification. My need for the paste had become all-consuming, driving every decision and action with relentless intensity. The periods between distributions stretched like torture, filled with a gnawing emptiness that went far beyond simple hunger. I found myself calculating routes through the facility that would bring me closer to Gamma 9, timing my movements to maximize opportunities for additional rations. The rational voice in my mind grew weaker with each passing day, overwhelmed by the chemical bliss that accompanied every portion of the blessed substance. The other workers had begun to move in coordinated patterns that suggested some form of collective consciousness, though they showed no signs of direct communication. Their behavior around the dispenser had acquired ritualistic elements, with specific positions and movements that seemed to serve no practical purpose. I found myself participating in these rituals without conscious decision, my body responding to impulses I could not identify or control. The writhing began 3 weeks after I had first tasted the amber paste from Gamma 9. What started as subtle flutters in my digestive tract had evolved into something far more disturbing, a deliberate movement that suggested intelligence behind the sensation. I could feel whatever had taken residence in my stomach responding to my daily routine, becoming more active during the hours leading up to each ration distribution. The creature, for I had begun to think of it as such, seemed to anticipate the arrival of fresh paste with an eagerness that matched my own growing obsession. My sleep had become plagued by dreams unlike anything I had experienced during my years of service or imprisonment. Visions of endless tunnels filled my nights, not the crude excavations carved by human hands, but organic passages that pulsed with their own rhythm. I found myself crawling through these living corridors, my body moving with the fluid grace I had observed in the other affected workers. The walls around me breathed, expanding and contracting in patterns that felt hauntingly familiar, as if I had traversed these paths countless times before. In these dreams, I was not alone. Thousands of others moved through the tunnels alongside me, their forms barely recognizable as human despite sharing my destination. We flowed together like components of a vast organism, each individual serving a purpose I could not comprehend but felt compelled to fulfill. The sensation of belonging, of being part of something greater than myself, provided a comfort that my waking hours could no longer match. I would wake from these visions with a profound sense of loss, my consciousness returning to the harsh reality of metal walls and artificial light. The investigation I had begun into Gamma 9's origins led me deeper into the facility than I had ever ventured before. The maintenance tunnels that serviced the dispenser network were a maze of corroded pipes and failing machinery, their passages barely wide enough for a man to crawl through. The air grew thicker as I descended, carrying scents that reminded me of decomposition and growth occurring simultaneously. Emergency lumens flickered sporadically, casting dancing shadows that made navigation treacherous. The feeding tubes that supplied Gamma 9 disappeared into sections of the facility that predated the current penal colony by centuries. Ancient stonework gave way to excavated chambers that showed signs of hasty abandonment, their walls scarred by what appeared to be mining equipment of unusual design. The imperial aquilas carved into these surfaces had been defaced or overgrown by the same organic filaments I had observed around the dispenser, creating patterns that hurt to look at directly. I discovered the sealed entrance during my fourth expedition into the maintenance areas. The adamantium barrier had been welded shut with such thoroughness that it suggested desperation rather than routine security measures. Plasma burns around the edges indicated that whatever lay beyond had been considered dangerous enough to warrant the most extreme containment measures available. The metal itself showed signs of stress that could only have been caused by sustained pressure from the other side, as if something had been trying to break through from within. The classified records I eventually accessed through a combination of bribery and careful observation revealed the true history of Korath Prime. The planet had been designated as a mining world only after extensive cleansing operations had eliminated what the Adeptus Mechanicus classified as xenoform contamination. The report spoke of a splinter fleet from Hive Fleet Behemoth that had somehow established a foothold in the planet's crust during the early years of the 31st millennium. The orbital bombardment that had supposedly cleansed the world had been followed by decades of excavation work designed to ensure complete eradication of the Xeno's presence. Teams of tech adepts had mapped every tunnel and chamber created by the invading organisms, documenting their findings in reports that grew increasingly disturbing as the investigation progressed. The final entries spoke of discoveries that challenged fundamental assumptions about Tyranid biology, organisms that appeared to have achieved some form of dormancy that could persist for centuries. The excavation work had been terminated abruptly after what the records described as a containment breach in the deepest sections of the tunnel network. The surviving tech adepts had recommended immediate planetary abandonment, but economic considerations had led to a compromise solution. The affected areas were sealed with multiple layers of adamantium barriers, while the upper levels were cleared for industrial development. The penal colony had been established directly above the sealed sections, its workers unknowingly laboring mere meters from horrors that defied classification. My fellow workers had begun to exhibit changes that went far beyond the improved energy and productivity I had initially observed. Their skin had taken on a waxy quality that seemed to absorb rather than reflect the facility's harsh lighting. Veins had become visible beneath this translucent surface, carrying fluids that moved in patterns inconsistent with normal human circulation. The luminescence in their eyes had grown stronger, creating a subtle glow that was particularly noticeable during the designated rest periods when the dormitory blocks were plunged into darkness. The hive mind behaviors had emerged gradually, so subtly that I might have missed them entirely if not for my military training in recognizing enemy coordination patterns. Workers would begin tasks without receiving orders, moving to positions that complemented the actions of their colleagues in ways that suggested shared knowledge. Their individual personalities, already suppressed by years of brutal conditioning, began to fade entirely as they became components of a larger consciousness that operated according to imperatives I could not fathom. Jorik had become the most advanced example of whatever transformation was occurring throughout the affected population. The former gunnery sergeant moved with an alien grace that made his previous military bearing seem clumsy by comparison. His speech patterns had simplified, reducing complex thoughts to basic statements that focused exclusively on immediate needs and objectives. Most disturbing of all, he had begun to emit a subtle pheromone that triggered responses in other affected workers, drawing them to cluster around him during meal distributions and rest periods. The thing inside my stomach had grown larger and more active, its movements becoming strong enough to create visible disturbances beneath my skin. I could feel it responding to the presence of other affected workers, becoming agitated when I was separated from them for extended periods. The sensation was accompanied by an overwhelming urge to seek out the amber paste, a compulsion that overrode every other consideration, including basic survival instincts. My investigation of the sealed tunnels had revealed evidence of ongoing biological activity despite the supposedly complete eradication of the Xeno's presence. Thermal imaging equipment salvaged from abandoned mining gear showed heat signatures moving through the spaces beyond the adamantium barriers. The patterns suggested organisms of considerable size and complexity, though their exact nature remained hidden behind layers of imperial security classifications that I lacked the authority to access. The organic filaments spreading throughout the lower levels had begun to form complex networks that resembled nervous systems more than simple plant growth. These structures pulsed with bioluminescent signals that seemed to carry information between different sections of the facility, creating a communication network that operated independently of the Imperial Vox systems. The tech adepts responsible for maintaining the facility's machinery had begun to report equipment malfunctions that correlated with the expansion of these organic networks. The paste from Gamma 9 had evolved in both consistency and potency as the weeks progressed. What had begun as a simple improvement in flavor and nutritional value had become something that defied classification as food. The substance moved with its own volition when exposed to air, forming tendrils that reached toward potential hosts with obvious intent. The euphoric effects had intensified to the point where affected workers could no longer function normally without regular consumption, their bodies entering withdrawal states that resembled the final stages of starvation. My own transformation had accelerated dramatically as my investigation progressed deeper into the facility's hidden history. The creature in my stomach had begun to communicate with me through sensations that bypassed conscious thought, directing my actions through impulses that felt like my own decisions. I found myself drawn to specific locations within the facility, areas where the organic networks were most developed and the barriers between the sealed sections were thinnest. The dreams had become more vivid and detailed, revealing glimpses of the vast organism that lay dormant beneath the penal colony. I could see chambers filled with biomass that pulsed with its own heartbeat, processing centers where organic matter was broken down and reconstituted according to patterns that served purposes beyond my comprehension. The knowledge that I was becoming part of this entity filled me with a mixture of terror and anticipation that I could no longer distinguish from genuine emotion. The other affected workers had begun to gather in the deep mining sections during their off-duty hours, drawn by instincts they could not articulate or resist. Their movements had acquired a ritualistic quality that suggested preparation for some event that remained hidden from my conscious understanding. I found myself participating in these gatherings without making a deliberate decision to do so, my body responding to signals that originated from the creature growing inside me. The barriers separating the sealed sections from the active mining areas had begun to show signs of stress that could not be attributed to normal geological activity. Hairline cracks had appeared in the adamantium plating, weeping fluids that tested positive for organic compounds unknown to Imperial science. The structural integrity of the entire facility had been compromised by forces that operated according to principles that challenged everything I thought I knew about physics and biology. The revelation that I was no longer alone in my knowledge came when I attempted to warn Arbitrator Marshall Kine about the contamination spreading through the facility. I had spent days preparing my approach, rehearsing the words that might convince him to investigate Gamma 9 and the changes occurring in the affected workers. My military training had taught me the importance of proper channels and protocol when reporting potential threats to Imperial security. I believed that presenting evidence of Xeno's contamination would trigger immediate containment procedures. I found Kine in his command sanctum during the third watch, when the facility operated with minimal supervision and the servo skulls followed their automated patrol routes. The Arbitrator Marshal sat behind his desk of polished adamantium, his massive frame encased in the ceremonial power armor that marked his rank and authority. The red optical lenses of his helmet tracked my approach with what I initially interpreted as standard vigilance. Only when I drew closer did I notice the subtle wrongness in his posture and movements. The armor that had once represented the absolute authority of Imperial law now seemed to contain something that merely wore the shape of human authority. Kine's responses to my carefully prepared report came in measured tones that lacked the harsh authority I had learned to fear during my years of imprisonment. When I described the biological contamination spreading through the lower levels, he acknowledged my concerns with an understanding that felt fundamentally alien. His questions focused not on containment or eradication, but on the specific effects the amber paste had produced in the affected workers. The wrongness became undeniable when I observed Kine consuming his own ration during our meeting. The substance that emerged from the personal dispenser mounted in his sanctum possessed the same amber hue and organic consistency that had marked the contaminated paste from Gamma 9. The arbitrator marshal consumed it with the same reverent deliberation I had witnessed in Jorik and the other affected workers, his movements slowing as the euphoric effects took hold. The realization that the contamination had reached the highest levels of facility command filled me with a despair that went beyond simple fear. My attempt to contact the tech adepts responsible for maintaining the facility's critical systems proved equally futile. Tech adept Vex had established his workshop in the upper levels of the facility, surrounded by the cogitators and analytical equipment necessary for monitoring the complex machinery that kept the penal colony operational. The mechanical augmentations that comprised most of his body had always made him seem more machine than human, but the changes I observed during our meeting suggested that even his cybernetic components had been compromised by whatever force was spreading through the facility. The organic filaments I had discovered in the lower levels had somehow integrated themselves with Vex's mechanical systems, creating hybrid networks that pulsed with the same bioluminescent signals I had observed throughout the contaminated areas. His optical sensors flickered with patterns that matched the rhythm of these biological components, while his Vox grill emitted harmonics that resonated with frequencies beyond normal human hearing. When I attempted to explain my discoveries about the sealed tunnels and the dormant Xeno's presence, his responses indicated knowledge that he should not have possessed. Vex described the contents of the classified reports I had accessed through my covert investigations, detailing the true history of Korath Prime and the failed eradication efforts that had preceded the establishment of the penal colony. His mechanical voice carried inflections that suggested satisfaction rather than concern as he explained how the Tyranid biomatter had survived the orbital bombardment by entering a state of cryptobiotic suspension. The organisms had remained dormant for centuries, waiting for conditions that would allow them to resume their biological functions. The revelation that the amber paste contained active Tyranid genetic material struck me with the force of a physical blow. Vex explained how the dormant organisms had been inadvertently accessed during the deep mining operations, their cellular structure compromised by the excavation equipment but not completely destroyed. The damaged biomatter had been processed through the facility's recycling systems, eventually reaching the protein paste production units, where it had begun to regenerate according to its original programming. The Ripper organism genetic material had proven remarkably adaptable to its new environment, using the existing organic components of the standard rations as raw material for reconstruction. The resulting hybrid substance retained the basic nutritional properties necessary to sustain human life while introducing biological agents that began the process of assimilation from the moment of consumption. The sweet flavor that had made the paste so appealing was actually a chemical attractant designed to encourage repeated consumption by potential host organisms. The creatures growing inside the affected workers were not parasites in any conventional sense, but rather biological integration systems that gradually replaced human cellular structures with Tyranid equivalents. The process began in the digestive tract, where the harsh acids provided an ideal environment for the organisms to establish their initial foothold. From there, they spread throughout the host body via the circulatory and nervous systems, maintaining the appearance of human function while fundamentally altering the underlying biological processes. My isolation became complete as I realized that every authority figure in the facility had been compromised by the same process that was transforming the general population. The servo skulls that had once represented the omnipresent surveillance of imperial law now served a different master, their programming altered by the hybrid networks that had infiltrated the facility's computer systems. The enforcement servitors that maintained order through violence and intimidation moved according to new imperatives that prioritized the protection and expansion of the contaminated areas. The affected workers had begun to exhibit behaviors that went far beyond simple coordination, displaying a collective consciousness that operated according to principles I could barely comprehend. They moved through the facility with purpose that transcended individual needs or desires, working together to accomplish objectives that serve the growing organism rather than imperial production quotas. Their individual personalities had been subsumed into something larger, their human memories and experiences becoming mere data points in a vast biological computer. Jorik had become completely unrecognizable as the man I had once known, his physical form altered by the integration process to the point where human and Xeno's characteristics blended seamlessly. His skin had taken on the chitinous quality characteristic of Tyranid bioforms, while his limbs had elongated and developed additional joints that allowed for inhuman flexibility. The intelligence that looked out through his eyes belonged to something that had never been human, though it retained access to his memories and experiences. The facility's Vox casters had been modified by the spreading organic networks, their transmission capabilities enhanced by biological components that operated according to principles unknown to Imperial technology. Instead of the standard communications traffic that should have connected the penal colony to orbital command stations, the systems now broadcast signals into the void of space. The frequencies and modulation patterns defied analysis by conventional methods, but their purpose became clear as I monitored their transmissions over several days. The signals contained coordinates that marked Korath Prime's location with mathematical precision, along with biological data that described the current state of the facility's population and resources. The transmissions repeated continuously, growing stronger as more organic matter was integrated into the communication systems. Each broadcast carried an unmistakable message of invitation, calling to something vast and hungry that waited in the darkness between stars. The creature inside my stomach had grown large enough to create visible distortions in my abdominal cavity, its movements becoming so pronounced that I could track its position by watching the shifting patterns beneath my skin. The euphoric effects of the amber paste had been replaced by a constant awareness of the alien presence, a sensation that combined physical discomfort with psychological invasion. I could feel it probing the edges of my consciousness, seeking pathways that would allow it to access my memories and experiences. My resistance to the integration process had become a source of constant agony as the organism attempted to overcome my immune system and psychological defenses. The military conditioning that had sustained me through years of imprisonment now worked against me, preventing the surrender that would have ended the pain. Each day brought new attempts at assimilation, biological and psychological attacks that left me weakened and disoriented. The sealed sections beneath the facility had begun to breach their containment barriers as the growing organism directed its absorbed workforce to remove the obstacles that prevented its expansion. The adamantium plating that had held for centuries cracked and split under sustained pressure from tools and explosives operated by workers who no longer felt pain or fatigue. The ancient chambers beyond revealed horrors that challenged every assumption about the nature of Tyranid biology and Imperial security. The biomass that filled these spaces had achieved a level of organization that suggested intelligence far beyond anything documented in official xenobiology reports. Vast processing centers converted organic matter according to patterns that served purposes I could not fathom, while communication networks carried information through biological channels that operated faster than any known technology. The entire structure pulsed with its own heartbeat, a rhythm that had begun to synchronize with the movements of every affected worker in the facility. My attempts to escape the facility had been systematically thwarted by the collective consciousness that now controlled most of the population. The affected workers anticipated my movements with uncanny accuracy, positioning themselves to block potential exit routes while maintaining the illusion of normal activity. The servoskulls tracked my location with enhanced precision, their modified programming allowing them to predict my actions based on psychological profiles that had been compiled from decades of observation. The transformation of the facility continued at an accelerating pace as more workers were exposed to the contaminated paste and absorbed into the growing organism. Production quotas had been abandoned in favor of activities that served the expansion process, with mining equipment being used to excavate new chambers and processing centers. The adamantium that had once been destined for imperial war machines now provided raw material for biological structures that defied classification. The signals broadcasting from the facility's communication arrays had begun to receive responses from the void, faint transmissions that carried harmonics suggesting vast intelligence and infinite hunger. The coordinates being broadcast had attracted attention from something that moved through space according to principles that transcended conventional physics. The growing organism beneath Korath Prime was no longer alone in its efforts to establish a foothold in imperial space. The transformation had accelerated beyond anything I could have anticipated. What had begun as subtle changes in posture and behavior among the affected workers had evolved into something that challenged the very definition of human existence. I watched from the shadows of a maintenance alcove as Jorik led a group of his former comrades through the lower tunnels, their movements coordinated with a precision that spoke of shared consciousness rather than individual will. Their bodies had elongated and developed additional joints that allowed them to navigate the cramped passages with an efficiency that no human spine could achieve. The chitinous growths that had appeared on their skin now formed complex patterns that pulsed with bioluminescent signals, creating a visual communication network that supplemented whatever psychic connection bound them together. Their faces retained enough human features to be recognizable, but the intelligence that looked out through their eyes belonged to something vast and alien. When they moved past my hiding place, I caught the scent of their altered biochemistry, a mixture of human sweat and something that reminded me of the spawning pools described in Astra Militarum xenobiology briefings. My own body had begun the final stages of transformation, despite every attempt to resist the process. The creature in my abdomen had grown large enough to displace my internal organs, creating a constant pressure that made normal movement increasingly difficult. Its tendrils had spread throughout my circulatory system, and I could feel them probing the base of my skull with an insistence that suggested the integration process was nearing completion. The euphoric effects that had once accompanied consumption of the amber paste had been replaced by a constant awareness of alien thoughts pressing against the edges of my consciousness. The facility's superstructure groaned under stresses that exceeded its design parameters as the expanding organism beneath began to assert physical control over the installation. Walls that had stood for centuries developed hairline cracks that wept organic fluids, while the floor plates buckled upward as root-like structures pushed through from below. The air recycling systems had been compromised by biological growths that filtered the atmosphere according to alien requirements, filling the corridors with spores that triggered allergic reactions in my remaining human tissues. My desperate search for an escape route led me through sections of the facility that had been abandoned as the transformation progressed. The upper levels still maintained some semblance of imperial architecture, though even here the organic networks had begun to infiltrate the structural supports. Emergency lighting flickered sporadically as the power grid struggled to accommodate the energy demands of the growing organism, creating pools of shadow where things moved with purposes I preferred not to contemplate. The communications array that had once connected the penal colony to orbital command stations now broadcast continuously into the void, its signals amplified by biological components that had replaced critical electronic systems. I accessed one of the remaining functional terminals and discovered that the transmissions contained detailed biological data about every individual in the facility, along with tactical information about imperial defenses and patrol schedules. The coordinates being broadcast would guide something toward Korath Prime with mathematical precision, though the nature of that approaching presence remained hidden in encrypted data streams. The realization that the entire mining operation had become a beacon for Xeno's invasion filled me with a despair that went beyond personal fear. Decades of imperial investment in the facility's infrastructure and production capabilities had been subverted to serve an enemy that possessed patience measured in geological time scales. The Tyranid biomatter that had survived the original cleansing operations had used the penal colony's population as raw material for reconstruction, turning loyal imperial citizens into components of an organism that existed to consume and expand. The sealed sections beneath the facility had been completely breached, their adamantium barriers reduced to twisted metal by tools wielded with inhuman strength. The chambers beyond revealed the true scope of the contamination that had been growing beneath imperial noses for centuries. Vast processing centers converted organic matter according to patterns that served purposes beyond my comprehension, while spawning pools bubbled with fluids that would give birth to creatures designed for specific tactical roles. The entire complex pulsed with its own heartbeat, a rhythm that had synchronized with the movements of every transformed worker in the facility. My attempt to reach the surface through the main elevator shaft ended in failure when I discovered that the lift mechanisms had been modified by the organic networks spreading through the facility's infrastructure. The cables that should have carried emergency cars to the surface had been replaced by pulsing biological conduits that served the growing organism's transportation needs. Chitinous growths covered the shaft walls, creating handholds and passages that allowed the transformed workers to move vertically with spider-like agility. The maintenance tunnels that honeycombed the facility's superstructure offered another potential escape route, though navigation became increasingly difficult as the organic networks expanded their influence. Passages that had been cleared during my previous explorations were now blocked by root-like structures that wept acidic fluids capable of dissolving human tissue. The air in these confined spaces carried spores that triggered violent coughing fits, each breath introducing more alien genetic material into my compromised respiratory system. My discovery of the facility's original blueprints revealed emergency evacuation protocols that had been designed to contain exactly this type of contamination. Hidden throughout the installation were purge systems capable of flooding entire sections with promethium and igniting the resulting conflagration from orbital bombardment coordinates. The activation codes were stored in a secure vault beneath the command sanctum, protected by multiple layers of adamantium and automated defenses that should have remained functional even if the facility's personnel were compromised. The journey to the command vault required passage through sections of the facility where the transformation was most advanced. The corridors had been reshaped by biological forces that operated according to alien architectural principles, creating passages that curved and branched in patterns that hurt to follow with human eyes. The walls themselves had become semi-permeable membranes that allowed the transformed workers to move between chambers without using conventional doorways, their altered physiology enabling them to pass through barriers that would have stopped normal humans. The automated defenses protecting the vault had been compromised by the same organic networks that had infiltrated every other system in the facility. Servo skulls that should have challenged my approach instead observed my progress with optical sensors that flickered with bioluminescent patterns. The weapon systems that lined the vault's approaches remained inactive, their targeting cogitators apparently convinced that I posed no threat to whatever they now served. The realization that even the facility's most secure systems had been subverted filled me with a sense of cosmic helplessness. The activation codes I retrieved from the vault's data banks confirmed my worst fears about the scope of the contamination and the imperial response it would trigger. The emergency protocols were designed not just to purge the facility, but to sterilize the entire planet through sustained orbital bombardment. The coordinates stored in the system would guide Navy vessels to target every population center and industrial installation on Koreth Prime, ensuring that no trace of Xeno's contamination could survive to spread beyond the planet's atmosphere. My access to the facility's communication systems revealed that the Imperial Navy had already begun moving assets into position around Koreth Prime. The battle group assembling in the outer system included vessels equipped with cyclonic torpedoes and virus bombs, weapons capable of reducing the planet's surface to molten slag. The fleet's orders were explicit and uncompromising. No vessel would be permitted to leave the system until the contamination had been completely eradicated, regardless of how many Imperial citizens might be trapped on the surface. The transformed workers had begun gathering in the facility's central chambers, their movements suggesting preparation for some event that remained hidden from my conscious understanding. They arranged themselves in complex patterns that resembled the biological structures I had observed in the sealed sections, creating living mandalas that pulsed with coordinated bioluminescence. The air around these gatherings shimmered with psychic energy that made my remaining human consciousness recoil in instinctive revulsion. The creature inside my abdomen had grown large enough to create visible distortions in my torso, its movements becoming so pronounced that I could track its position by watching the shifting patterns beneath my skin. The pain that had accompanied its growth had been replaced by a numbness that suggested my nervous system was being systematically compromised. I could feel tendrils exploring the base of my skull, seeking pathways that would allow the alien consciousness to access my memories and override my individual will. My final attempt to activate the purge systems failed when I discovered that the organic networks had anticipated this possibility and taken countermeasures. The promethium storage tanks had been drained and their contents processed into biological compounds that served the growing organism's metabolic needs. The ignition systems had been disabled by growths that had severed critical connections while creating new pathways that redirected energy to alien purposes. Even the orbital bombardment coordinates had been altered to target Imperial Navy positions rather than the contaminated facility. The realization that escape was impossible came with a clarity that cut through the fog of alien influence that had been clouding my thoughts. The entire planet was surrounded by Imperial vessels whose commanders would accept nothing less than complete sterilization of the surface. The contamination had spread too far and penetrated too deeply to be contained by conventional means. Whether I remained human or completed the transformation process, my fate was sealed by the same Imperial doctrine that had once given meaning to my existence. The approaching presence that had been summoned by the facility's transmissions finally revealed itself as sensor readings detected massive bioships entering the outer reaches of the system. The Tyranid Hive fleet that responded to the beacon possessed capabilities that exceeded anything documented in Imperial tactical databases, their vessels moving through space according to principles that transcended conventional physics. The coordinates broadcast from Koreth Prime had guided them to a system where Imperial defenses were concentrated and vulnerable to coordinated assault. The choice that confronted me in those final moments transcended simple survival instincts and touched upon questions of loyalty and purpose that had defined my entire existence. I could surrender to the transformation process and become part of something vast and eternal, my individual consciousness absorbed into a collective intelligence that spans star systems. Alternatively, I could maintain my human identity until the Imperial bombardment reduced everything on the planet's surface to radioactive ash, dying as a loyal servant of the Emperor, even if my death served no practical purpose. The creature in my abdomen pulsed with anticipation as psychic pressure built throughout the facility, the collective consciousness of the transformed workers focusing their combined will upon my resistance. I could feel my individual thoughts being examined and cataloged, my memories of military service and Imperial loyalty becoming data points in an alien analysis of human psychology. The knowledge that my choice would ultimately serve the Imperium's purposes regardless of what I decided provided a final moment of clarity in the gathering darkness. The orbital bombardment began as I made my decision, the first cyclonic torpedoes impacting the planet's surface with force sufficient to crack continental plates. The facility shook as seismic waves propagated through the crust, while the transformed workers continued their preparations with mechanical indifference to the approaching destruction. In the grim darkness of the far future, there was indeed only war, and I had finally found my place in the Emperor's grand design for humanity's survival among the stars.